Blog Talk Radio.
The following broadcast is brought to you by the iGolf Sports Network.
Golf Talk Live is sponsored by the iGolf Sports Network and Golf Tips Magazine. Here's Andrew to tell you more about our sponsors.
iGolf Sports is a live stream broadcast and media production company providing quality programming designed to attract the golfing enthusiast. And Golf Tips, the game's most in-depth instruction magazine, including reviews on the latest equipment, tips from top teaching professionals, all designed to help you improve from tee to green. Welcome to Golf Talk Live with your host, Ted Odorico. Join Ted each week as he speaks with some of the best in golf. This week's special guest will join us a bit later. But first up is another great discussion on Coach's Corner. So let's introduce tonight's Coach's Corner panel.
All right. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Season 12 of Golf Talk Live. I'm your host, Ted Odorico, and as mentioned in the intro, we have a great Coach's Corner panel going to be joining me here in just a moment. John Hughes and Pete Buchanan, a couple of my favorites. I will tell you a little bit about them in just a moment. And then tonight I'm super excited. As you may recall, over the last few weeks of doing the shows, I've mentioned about an upcoming special travel feature that we're going to be inserting into the show the second and third Thursday of each month. And tonight starts the first. So we're going to be doing that. And that's sponsored by Golf Breaks by PGA Tour. And my very good friend and travel expert and co-host of that segment, Robert Kaufman, is going to be joining me, as well as an executive marketing person from Golf Breaks, Josh Post, will be joining us as our special guest on this particular segment, helping us to sort of kick things off. And we've got a special promotion as well that we'll be talking about when that happens. And that'll be happening at about 10 to the hour. So that'll be after the Coach's Corner segment. And then following the short travel segment that we're going to be inserting, I'll be speaking with my special guest this evening. Of course, I'm talking about Ken Griffin. He is the Director of Golf and Sales and Marketing at Boyne Golf up in Michigan. He'll be joining me on the latter part. So let's get things started here. I'm going to tell you a little bit about each of the guys coming on the panel, and then we'll get into tonight's discussion. As I mentioned, my good friends, John Hughes and Pete Buchanan. John is a PGA Master Professional and the Honorary President of the North Florida's PGA Section. He was also the recipient in 2013 of the PGA of America's Professional Development Award. He's also a senior editor and Golf Tips Magazine Top 25 instructor, plus part of our Golf Tips advisory staff. And in 2023, he received the North Florida PGA's Teacher and Coach of the Year Award as well. Joining him is Pete Buchanan, and Pete's been teaching this great game for well over 30 years now. He's the founder and director of instruction of Plain Simple Golf LLC, which, of course, houses the Plain Simple Golf Circuit and Simple Swing Repeater Training Brace. And he's been helping golfers all these years focus on building a repeatable swing. So, guys, welcome to tonight's Coach's Corner.
Thanks, Ted. It's good to be here.
Thanks, Ted.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you, guys. So we're going to get right down to brass tacks, as they say. And we're going to talk about really a beginner's guide, if you will, to golf. And we're going to be focusing on those that have never played this game before. And the reason I bring this up is, just as an example, last year, a lot of people don't realize this, but last year we've actually, for the last several years, have had a number of new golfers to the game. And I was really kind of taken back by this figure I'm going to tell you here in just a moment. I didn't realize it was as high, but in 2023, we had over 800,000 new female golfers that took up the game in 2023. And that's a big number. I don't know the breakdown of the graphics as far as how many of them were brand new or how many of them were coming back. But nevertheless, that was a pretty big number. That's not too far shy of a million. And that's pretty impressive. So a lot of women are coming into the game, and we're really excited about that. But we wanted to talk about really all beginning golfers. And I think one of the first things that we really need to sort of help them identify is to develop a realistic timeline to see game improvement. And we're going to talk about a few different areas, and I'm going to get into some other questions as time permits. So, Pete, I'm going to talk to you first with this, and then John. there's really, I think, sort of three areas that I want to break down to. And the first one is what happens in the first month to 3 months. So what should happen for the new golf? And I'm going to sort of lay this out for you, and then I want you to respond. So I've given some realistic timelines. What typically should happen? And I'll give you an example from the golfer's perspective. You know, maybe they're going to be visiting a driving range initially, maybe even a golf store, kind of, you know, getting the lay of the land. Certainly, they're going to struggle to maybe hit the ball if they've never played before and really not going to have any idea of what they're doing. Some may even get an opportunity to get out and play on the golf course in that time frame. So if you had the opportunity to tap into some of these new golfers coming to the game, what game plan are you going to lay out for them? What are you going to recommend, or what would you recommend if somebody came up to you that's in this set, if you will, in that first month to 3 months of them getting introduced to the game? What's the game plan you're going to lay out for them?
Oh, that's a really great question. First of all, thanks, Ted, for having me on. And John, it's always a great time to be on with you. You know, the beginners always try to, first off, when I get them in there, is to find out, you know, what have they done previously? Have they played any other sports, any other games? You know, what's their background? How much time are they going to have to devote to, you know, practicing? You know, what their aspirations are for where they want to go and, you know, how far they want to get in this game. And then start to lay out, you know, here's the things we're going to look at. Just start off by telling them what the game is all about, you know, how it's played, what all the terms are, how everything works, and then start to get them to understand that, you know, you have different areas of the game, you know, breaking into putting and chipping and pitching, the short game shots, bunker shots, and, you know, explain to them you're going to have to make some full swings to advance the ball. But just sort of giving them a layout of, you know, here's what the game is all about. Here are the tools that we're going to use to play the game. And if they don't have any, you can obviously recommend, you know, getting them started, get something to use. But just give them a good basic understanding of what the game is. You know, it's going to take a little bit of practice, so try to lay out, based on their time and availability, you know, how much they can practice on the things that we're going to give them. I always tend to start with beginners with the short game. I think it's just easier that way. I like to get them an understanding of what's going on around the green, because I think obviously there's more shots involved in that, and that takes a greater amount of time when they're on the golf course. So the better we can get them comfortable around the greens and get those shots under control, it's a little bit easier to advance them from the full shots on the playing golf and get them around the golf course in a more reasonable time. But that's sort of how I would get started, you know, just get a basic understanding for them, you know, what they're going to be up against as well. You know, it's not always, you know, golf has a little bit of work involved into it to be able to do it and do it well. But just so they understand, you know, what the game is going to be all about, what it takes to play it, the equipment that's involved, and some of the time that they'll need to put into it, you know, to be able to start getting a better understanding and be able to hit some good shots as they go along.
Well said. And just a couple of other quick points. You know, obviously, when you're first sort of starting off, you know, you have to have realistic expectations of your game. And in some cases, you know, if you get an opportunity, you're going out on the golf course and you're playing a little bit, and you're not maybe a very good golfer, maybe you haven't really, you know, don't understand some of the swing mechanics and things like that at that point, you know, in order to help keep pace of play, you know, don't be afraid. Let your partners know if you're out there playing with another group that maybe you're not familiar with. You know, you want to finish each hole, but at the same time, you don't want to keep, you know, slow down the pace of play. So, you know what, let them know and say, hey, if I feel like I'm really struggling, I'm going to pick up and you know, we'll go on to the next hole type of thing. You're obviously at some point, you're going to hit some good shots. That's going to give you that feeling of, wow, I really love this game. And we've all had those shots even later on. And then obviously you're going to have some opportunities that come along where you're going to just want to, you know, quit because it's frustrating and it's challenging. But we certainly don't want to get you to give up, you know, to give in. You need to keep pursuing that. And I think the optimal thing in that early period, it's, in my opinion, and I'm sure you guys would agree, you have to seek out a professional to get started off right. If you try to do everything yourself and just sort of, you know, nilly-willy go out, You might be fortunate to have some success, but more often than not, if you don't have a general understanding of the game, you're going to struggle right from day one, and that's going to add to the frustration. John, you're going to pick up from months 3 to 12. So at this particular stage, you know, maybe they're starting to hit more consistent shots, you know, out at the range. They might even be able to play on the golf course and finish, you know, a couple of holes. Maybe they're finishing their whole round. One of the pitfalls, though, is, and we've heard this all, where, you know, they've started to watch a lot of YouTube videos. They may have even done that in the first 3 months. And they're trying to figure out how to swing better. And that's going to add to a lot of the confusion. So if you're picking up a student that's now been in the game for, say, that 3 to 12 months, what's the conversation going to be like, and where are you going to take them at this point and move them forward?
So first off, thanks, Ted. Always great to be on the show. It's an incredible opportunity. Here's where things pick up from there. It's typically, wow, I've got this, but yet they don't. Wow, this is really good, but why does this happen? There's a lot of why questions. There's a ton of doubt going on. Is this really the game for me? What's it going to take? So I'm typically picking up the conversation with them as far as patience, number one. Number two, there's certainly a bunch of different skills here. It's not just two or three that are going to make you successful. I start having them sort of introspectively look at what they will do and what they won't do relative to their daily schedule. There's other priorities in life, and let's put it realistically, where are you now versus when you started 3 to 12 months ago, and how far have you come? And let's not judge it off just your score. Let's judge it on your ability to have fun, enjoy what you're doing. I think Pete really has it down pat, and most people neglect this. They want to hit that long drive, yet all the scores are adding up to your short game. That's why I'm saying, hey, let's not look at it as score. Let's look at it as fun, and now let's look at it as fun and particular skills. And you're always going to be working on the short game. The long game, it's about making less mistakes and not necessarily big swing mistakes, decisional mistakes. What's the cause and effect of your decisions based on what your skill set is? To sum it up, I would say this is a discovery time of clarifying your passion for the game, clarifying what skills you've been able to create and which skills aren't necessarily needing the most maintenance or attention so much as what skills can we use from a strength standpoint of view to keep you going and having some fun. And Pete, thanks again for your ability to be on the show with me. It's always fun to be on the show with you too.
You know, great points, John. And you know, I think the other thing too, just to sort of go back a little bit, you know, obviously you want to seek out a professional. You want to, you know, interview the professional as much as they want to have a conversation with you to kind of get, as Pete, as you pointed out, to find out where things are. And I think very early on, again, keeping things in a realistic platform, you want to develop some sort of goals or a strategy of achievable goals early on that are very easily able to obtain, so that that increases or decreases the level of frustration. And then as you progress along, you know, there are going to become more challenging goals that you're going to want to pursue. So I think it's important to lay that foundation out through that conversation very, very early on. Pete, we're hitting year two now. They've gotten through the first year, and they're starting to feel a little bit better. They're actually starting to really have some fun. They're playing full rounds of golf with maybe even some more experienced players and feeling a little bit more confident. Now they're really wanting to focus on score a little bit more. John talked about really early on maybe not dwelling so much on the score as opposed to other factors, but now they're maybe looking to shoot under 100 or 90 or what have you. So year two, this is when things can really start to change even more. What are your thoughts here, and what do we need to do to help somebody at this level?
Well, moving forward now, if you're going to start lowering the score, we have to really get the short game shots down and under control. They understand, you know, the different techniques that are necessary, practicing more of situational type short game shots as well as just regular technique shots, getting them an understanding of feel for distances and controlling those distances. So really starting to fine-tune a little bit about how they not only hit the shots in the short game, but how they practice those shots. It's really important that they understand that there's, you know, practicing is not just hitting golf balls. There's got to be a purpose to what you're doing, or especially in the short game, you know, giving them the understanding of how these shots relate to what they're going to do and how it's going to lower their score, and, you know, just getting them, you know, more comfortable with playing those short game shots. But on the other side of the coin, too, you also have to start talking about, okay, now that you're playing, where are your errors at? You know, what shots are giving you the most trouble? And how are you hitting it off the tee? What are your shots in the fairway look like? So, you know, what are your misses? Where are they going? So now we can start to fine-tune what those are doing, get those more under control. And, you know, I know that, you know, you can still make a decent score even if the tee shot isn't the greatest, but, you know, we all know as much as we've played that, you know, those tee shots can take scores away from us too if they're not very good. So, you know, getting a little bit more comfortable driving the ball. And that only is not understanding just, you know, with the driver, but there may be situations where you want to hit something with more pitch on it. So giving them an understanding of what driving is all about. It's not necessarily always hitting the driver, but it could be about understanding in what situations do I take more loft so I can hit better shots. You know, what are my strengths? What shots do I hit the best? How do I play shots so I can, you know, utilize those strengths when I'm playing? But I think now it's just an overall assessment of their game. Where are they at? What shots are giving them the most trouble? But as John said before, you know, you always have to practice the short game. So, you know, they got to get the short game down and make it one of their best parts of their game so that the score can come down. But then taking the rest of their game, figuring out where the weaknesses are and starting to build on those.
Again, well said, Pete. John, we're now going to step into year three plus, and now you're getting good enough to really maybe really challenge yourself on some trickier golf courses. You're hitting pretty good shots. Maybe you're going to even consider going on a golf trip with friends or a group. You're starting to have a little bit more understanding about equipment as well. Maybe typically you've rented clubs up to this point, or maybe you had some hand-me-downs. If you reach this plateau, shall we say, you're probably, if you don't already have your own equipment, you're going to look at equipment. And so we want to touch on that a little bit just as sort of a refresher. You're obviously getting familiar with some of the golf lingo, that sort of thing. And you might even want to, you've been introduced or have you heard about through others, some of the available golf apps and other gadgets that are out there. So really, to sum it up, you're starting to feel like a true golfer. You've really put some hard work in. You've built a good solid base to work from with your instructor. Now it's really time to get out there and have some fun and really take this game to whatever level you have decided from day one. What are your thoughts here? Touch on a little bit about the equipment and how to take advantage of some of the technology out there.
Sure. In this category of golfer, this is typically where things settle down a little bit. The initial honeymoon phase is done. You're starting to make a lot of friends playing. You're exposing yourself to a lot of creative new ideas. Like you said, playing a lot of courses, maybe some top-notch courses you've always dreamt of being able to play. It's typically in this time frame where you can get a little distracted. You can not play as well and sort of toss the clubs to the side for a little bit and take a breather. You could start blaming other things and other people on how poorly you play. But most of all, in this time frame, this is probably the most critical time frame to retain a golfer, to retain your passion, simply because the honeymoon's over. From an equipment standpoint of view, if you did not get fit for clubs to this point, it's time that you do, particularly if you're taking it a bit more seriously than, say, some of your friends. A set of fitted clubs can go a long way for 3 to 5 years based on how often you're playing and how often you're practicing to have you play better. You're not buying a game so much as you're buying pieces of equipment that fit you and your game that allow you to work better with your current skills. I'm a proponent of it from day one as far as getting fit, but now from years 3 to 10, you're getting a little bit more serious. You've got a bankroll to go get some really good clubs and feel like this is going to make a difference. You owe it to yourself to get fit. From a let me play some other courses, let me put another notch on the bedroom post kind of outlook, be careful. Not necessarily to be careful to play not so hard courses or stay away from difficult courses. You don't have to go all the way back to the tips. You don't have to do it all at one time. What I hear from some of my clientele in that same category is they had a great time, but they wish they'd played another tee box, or they wish they had added time to the trip, or wish they had played it at a different time of year and paid a little bit extra for the tee time. Be careful what you're doing there. Be careful how you're going about planning the trip, who you're planning the trip with, even if it's just by yourself. Pick the right times of year. Save the money to play it during a good time of year, not necessarily, say, when they're going through some maintenance to get it prepped for their peak season. Yes, you'll get a lesser rate, but you may even get a lesser experience as well. From a skill development standpoint of view, here's where you start developing the skills to get you over the milestones that I write about in the magazine. And as you try to climb over those milestones, realize that the details get more in quantity and much more intense as far as the detail goes. And I'll give you an example. You're shooting in the 80s and you love it, but 70s really where you want to be. What's your putting stats? What's your first putt proximity, regardless of whether you hit a green or not? This is the details. You've learned to putt to break 100 those first couple of years. You break 90. You're bringing the putting numbers down. Now it's time to really hone in on some details if you plan to go further with the game.
Well said. And, you know, there's always an opportunity to make adjustments along the way. This is something that, you know, in your golfing career, whether you're, you know, somebody that's aspiring to be a top level player or just a weekend warrior, you're always assessing your game along the way and making adjustments appropriately as it goes. And this is where, you know, having that initial, you know, going back to what Pete talked about, sort of having that assessment with the student and really honing in as to, you know, why are they playing? What's their, you know, sort of long-term goal? What is it they're looking to accomplish? Are they wanting to be a more elite player, or are they just wanting to go out there and have fun? Having that initial conversation is going to help guide, you know, your steps along the way. And there's a lot of things. The other thing, just very quickly about equipment, that I just want to add on to what you were talking about, John, is I agree with you. I think very early on you want to get fitted properly. But the other thing to keep in mind, too, is even though, you know, you can play up to 14 clubs is the maximum allowed in golf, you don't necessarily have to start off with 14 clubs right away. It might be okay early on in the stages to maybe just have 9 clubs, or even a set of 12 might be a recommendation. And add, as your game skill level increases, you may want to add specific clubs to that. So, again, you don't necessarily have to play with a full set initially. Obviously, there's key clubs you're going to need to have. Your shorter clubs, your wedges and things like that, but you can make some adjustments along the way. So it doesn't have to be a big investment right away, but as time goes on, you definitely want to do that. Pete, what are some other things that, you know, and again, keep in mind we're really honing in on the beginning golfer, so we're going under the assumption that most of these people really don't know what they need or what they should have. What are some other essentials that they might need to purchase?
Well, I could go a long way. I definitely want to have a rangefinder, you know, make sure that, you know, they're understanding distances while they're out there. But John made a point about stats. You know, there's some, you know, apps you can use now that you can track every shot you're hitting, all the proximities to the hole. And so now you can really, you know, start to figure out what's going on and all of the things that are going on with your game while you're playing. So I highly recommend you look for some of those. You know, just from a simple standpoint, and they've been playing a little bit, you know, make sure the shoes you have are comfortable. You know, there's nothing worse than, you know, you look out for a certain style of shoe and by 18 holes your feet are killing you. You know, make sure you're comfortable with what you're wearing. You know, have efficient things in your bag with, you know, more gloves when you're practicing. You know, make sure you always have the various accessories with, you know, certain number of tees, certain number of golf balls. So it's just simple things that can, you know, just make sure that you're having a better time while you're out there. But I really think, you know, as you're starting to hone in and fine-tune, if you find somebody who, you know, working with that has some details, some launch monitors that you can really get down into better efficient numbers, maybe from, you know, pressure mats, you know, if you're really looking to take somebody who's a beginner that's really looking to really start to find themselves into a place, you can get some of these things available to you if you find somebody who has those that you're working with. You know, because some of these can be quite expensive, as you know, we all well know. But, you know, these are some things that, you know, as you're starting to move out of that that stage where you're starting to play more, you know, the fit that you guys have talked about is really important. You know, fine-tuning the wedges, I think that's really, really key for short-game shots. Mm-hmm. You have to have good wedges, and I'd have those from the beginning. You know, there's nothing worse than having bad wedges when you start. You just can't get the shots that you're looking for. So getting wedges that are, you know, the proper bounce, the proper law for you, just fit with the right shafts. I mean, those are really, really important to start with. But, yeah, those are some of the things that I think, you know, accessory-wise you can have. You know, a yardage, you know, a rangefinder I think is a really good one to have in your bag. So, you know, you always know what you're doing. And then there's some other things, you know, that are out there for assisting the game, like aim point and things for putting. You know, really some additive things that you can do to help you with, you know, the lines and the readings and things like that, I think will be beneficial as well.
Yeah, and just to add just a little bit to that, you're exactly right. And I think something that beginning golfers need to keep in mind, you know, golf certainly, it can be affordable or it can be very costly depending on which way you go. And you don't have to go out and buy the top golf ball. When you're not really a very accomplished golfer yet, you don't need to be, you know, buying, and I'm not going to get into specifics of brands or anything, but there's some, you know, there's different compression golf balls out there, depending on your swing speed and things like that. So you don't have to get the highest compression golf ball that the tour pros are playing because you're not making the same contact that they are. So it's much more affordable. Again, golf shoes, if you're walking the golf course, you know, you're going to be walking a number of miles, probably anywhere from 9+ miles, depending on what golf course you play. And, you know, if they're not comfortable, your feet are sore after, you know, a little bit, especially when you get past the hole 9, you start to feel it more. Definitely, you know, some sort of a GPS device like a rangefinder, what have you. Again, obviously you want to have a good supply of tees and maybe even a groove cleaner, towel. And just one quick note on the wedges as well. If you're playing a set of golf clubs, maybe hand-me-downs, or you've got yourself a used set, it's not just things like the grip and obviously, you know, are you playing the proper shaft, but you need to check and have somebody that knows what they're doing, but check the grooves on your wedges. If you're playing, you know, wedges that have really worn grooves because they've been around for a while, you're not going to make, you know, you're not going to get the ball coming off the face effectively. So you want to make sure that the equipment, it doesn't have to be brand new, but you've got to make sure that it's going to perform the way it should do it as well. So a lot of great points there, Pete. And I think in addition to that, obviously this is something that you're going to be, John, I'm coming to you now, is you need to really understand the basic or fundamentals of the golf swing. And there's a lot of different things that we need to know. And it might seem very simple, but you'd be surprised at how many beginning golfers haven't got a clue maybe you could walk through just a few of them. We don't need to get into all of them, but maybe just a few of them.
Sure. I think the biggest one that I see people struggle with when they turn around and go, why, coach, did the ball do that, is ball flight laws, just simple ball flight laws, and start with the face of the golf club. Was the face square to the target, open to the target, close to the target, and just start taking inventory. Don't ask why it was like that. Just start taking inventory, and your supercomputer between the two ears is going to figure a lot of that out on its own. What you need to be thinking of while on the golf course is just that. That's where the adjustments are made. The adjustments aren't made in your swing. They're made in how you set up. That's the second real key. I'm writing a piece now about 5, 6, 7 things that I see on the range every day that even whether you're a beginner, an intermediate, you've been playing a while, there's just things that if you could change these 5 or 6 or 7 things, how would you change them? I'm going to give you an example. Where is the face when you put the club down? That's going to affect how the face hits the ball, which in turn is going to affect where the ball is flying to. I think that's a really simple key basic that in the heat of the moment you forget about, but it's telling you a lot more than you realize. And once you wrap your head around that, the game doesn't necessarily become easier. It becomes a little bit simpler to decipher and make those adjustments for you. That'd be one. Number two, learning from your mistakes. A lot of people just keep making the mistake. They can't figure out why they're making the mistake, yet they keep doing the same thing. If you're looking for something different, you've got to do something different. And typically, whether you're a beginner to playing for 20, 30 years, it keeps Pete and I in business. You've been doing the same thing over and over and over again and can't figure it out. That's the definition of insanity. Do anything different, but keep it to a priority system. Don't be experimenting outside of your skill capability. It's okay to experiment outside your proverbial comfort box, but realize what your skills are and aren't, and be willing to push the envelope only so far as to do something different to see what you can get accomplished. A great way of doing that is, do you know how to shape a shot? Some people can do it, some people can't. Pressing your skill level would be, hey, all I can do is hit a fade. Why don't I see how straight I can hit it? If you're hitting a fade all the time and you just don't have the swing characteristics to hit the draw, don't frustrate yourself. Learn to hit it straighter. Likewise, in the reverse, if you can hit a lot of draws and can't hit a fade, that's just an example of it. And third, be patient. Be patient with yourself. Be patient with the people that you surround yourself with on the golf course. Be patient with golf course operators. Be patient with the maintenance people. Be patient with the people in front of you and behind you on the golf course. So many times that patience level runs out and the frustration sets in, and then all of a sudden the displacement of your frustration can cause some issues. It can cause some issues with people that think highly of you, but yet they figured out you can't handle your own adversity on the golf course. I see this a lot where people just get so frustrated that it's negatively contagious on the people that are around them. Golf course is not inviting you back. Yes, that does happen. And just being able to deal with adversity, be patient. Be patient with everything you do, whether it's improving, playing, getting to the golf course, going home from the golf course. I think you'd be real surprised when you pay yourself some patience how things level out for you.
I couldn't agree more. Again, well said. And Pete, this really goes – John raises a really great point, sort of finish things off on that note, and that is – you know, the mind game, the mental game, if you will, as some refer to it, is a hugely overlooked area of the game by most amateurs and particularly beginning golfers. They're so focused on, you know, wanting to hit that great driver, wanting to, you know, make that 30, you know, foot putt and what have you. But they forget about as things that John pointed out, you know, the increased level of frustration and how that manifests into your game. Are there some techniques that you've found successful with some of your players on how to ratchet that down? What is it, you know, obviously this gets into the area of self-talk and thing. And I think it's important that you learn these techniques very early on in your golfing life, because the sooner you learn it, the more you practice it and incorporate it into your, you know, whatever level of play you might be at, the better and more repeatable it's going to be, as opposed to waiting, you know, until later. So what are some things that you would recommend to help sort of keep things in perspective and not let things like tension and that sort of thing creep in because you're overwhelmed or you're exhausted or you're frustrated with what's happening on your game or what's happening around the golf course? What are some thoughts here?
Well, the first thing I would look at, just going a little bit deeper in what John was talking about, he's talking about learning from your mistakes. You know, I want all of my people to understand what controls what, you know, so that when you understand, you know, what controls the face, what controls the direction, you know, what's going to help you with the contact. If you understand what the controllers are, then it eases the frustration, because now you understand exactly what to change to fix it. And so that's really important, that they understand the cause and effect. What's going on? Why do I hit the shots that I hit? It's always, you know, good for them to understand, you know, what is happening, but most importantly, what do I do to fix it? And so I always try to get them to work towards correct instead of fighting an incorrect. It's a totally different ball game when you're working towards correct and you understand what that is and what correct is for each individual player, what they're trying to achieve. I think if you can get them that great understanding of, you know, how to practice and what they're trying to do, that will immediately change what's going on with the contact so they can get there a little bit faster. I think that will ease a lot of the frustration. I think understanding, too, that, you know, not every shot has to be perfect when you're playing golf. You know, you can still make some really, really good scores and, you know, not hit some really great shots. That's just part of the deal. We all strive to want to hit it better, but we also have to understand how to score, you know, when those things aren't happening. And so, you know, you don't have to hit everything perfect. You just got to be able to keep it in play. And, you know, going back to what I was talking about before, you know, mental side, you know, what are your strengths? Let's play to them. I mean, you know, if you're on the driving range warming up and you're hitting every driver 55 or 60 yards to the right, I probably wouldn't tee off with a driver on that hole. So, I mean, the first hole, I mean, that's giving you an understanding, okay, things aren't going as well as I'd like, but if I put some more pitch in my hand, now I can control the ball around the golf course. You know, so understanding things like that. You know, it's always a little bit frustrating, but, you know, to understand that, you know, it's definitely a game that we're playing, first and foremost. The better you can understand, you know, what this game is all about, enjoying the fact that you're out there with some friends, having some fun. Don't let the bad shots get to you, because we all have them. It's just the way to just turn on the television on the weekend. You're going to see them. Even the best to play the game are going to have bad shots, but it's what you do after that bad shot that's important. How are you going to get yourself moving forward from the shot that you just hit? So understanding your situation, I always like to use that old episode of Leave It to Beaver, you know, when the Beaver would get in trouble, and instead of just fessing up, he'd just put himself in more trouble and more trouble, you know. If you get in trouble, get out. And so if you hit a bad shot that goes into the woods, you know, just take the one to get back out of there. You know, golf has a way of evening itself out. So if you take that one shot to put yourself back in the fairway, you probably made a 25-footer that you probably shouldn't have made, but you did. Well, you just made up for the one shot that you took out. So there's always a give and take when you're out on the golf course. So, you know, my best advice is, you know, try to be as even keeled as you can. Have as much fun as you can. Don't let the bad shots get to you. You know, use some breathing techniques to help, you know, deep breath before you start off. Say, hold on. Let me just take a deep breath. Let me just pause here for a second and then get started again. And I think, you know, if you can do that around the golf course and just settle yourself down, I think you'll have, first of all, much more fun. But I think the better understanding you have of what controls what, the less frustration you're going to have and the easier it's going to be for you to get yourself around practicing and playing the game.
Yeah, and as you pointed out, you know, there's so many even great players out there that will tell you, you know, if you had a few minutes to sit down with them, they'll tell you they all struggle. I mean, even Tiger talks about many times where he went to a golf course to play, you know, an event, and his driver was not working the way he wanted it to work. Now, it's still maybe better than, you know, 85% of the people out there or more, but it wasn't working up to his satisfaction. It wasn't his A game, as he said. But what he did have the ability was his recovery. And if you ask most PGA or LPGA professionals, they will tell you that it's really it's how they recover from those bad shots. You know, Nicholas said that as well. I mean, it's how you think your way around the golf course. It's a game that you play. It's not just about the shot. And, you know, obviously you want to put as many good shots together, but, you know, you also have to be realistic that there are going to be some times when you're not going to hit it exactly where you wanted it to go or even in the direction you wanted it to go. But how you handle from that point moving forward is really going to dictate how things happen. And too often, you know, John, as I'm sure you can attest to, as will Pete and myself, is how many times we've seen a golfer very early on in their round will literally collapse because they've had a couple of bad holes or even a few bad shots, and it just dictates the rest of their round. So just to sum up in the few moments we have left, John, if you want to just talk about just a little bit, if you wouldn't mind, again, from day one, what would you recommend if you wanted to start somebody off? You've worked with them, you've given them a couple of lessons, and you want to put together a program, given the fact that not everybody has the same time available as others, but just a general program, what would it involve, and what kind of time could they commit and still see some results without having to give away, you know, all of their time?
That's a great question. I think Pete would agree. We get that asked a lot of us by potential clients, current clients, even past clients. I always talk about life priorities. Where does golf fit into your life priorities? If it's not within the top five, then let's be realistic about that time frame and that program. If it's in the top five, then let's escalate what that program may or may not be. And the top five doesn't necessarily mean score. It means your level of commitment and passion to the game. Is it just a passing hobby that you do once a month, or is it something you spend a great deal of time on, your family spends a great deal of time on? It's close enough to whatever you believe in and the family and your profession that it comes in four or five that you really want to bear down and make some serious commitments. The other realistic thing is when a coach puts a program together for you, we're hoping, we're crossing our fingers that you're going to go home, go to a different golf course, driving range, wherever it is, and you're going to get some quality practice in before you come back and try to add to that program. Most of us are trying to build a building block process for you in a program. Not necessarily that one skill is totally dependent upon another, but how they intertwine and how you metamorphosize yourself from the bare basics to be able to handle yourself, and as Pete said, understand what the controllable aspects are. If you're not doing yourself justice by at least making a small effort, when you come back to do the program, don't be surprised when you're a really good coach, and this is a mark of a really good coach, will ask you to repeat the last lesson. Don't take it personally. We're trying to get you somewhere where you get results for yourself. It's not about us. It's not about the teacher in school telling you you've got to do the lesson over again. If you're really into a program, make that commitment. Make it realistic based on your level of commitment within your lifestyle and where it fits in your priority system. Third thing with that program, pay attention to the details. Work more on those. You don't have to be ultra inquisitive and ultra thinking about these details. Pick one. You'd be very, very surprised. And I talk to my clients who own flight scopes or simulators. They're worried about numerous different data points. I ask them to focus on one. And typically when you focus on one, there are others that will follow behind and improve. And I think that in a nutshell, if you can take a program and put it into that kind of perspective, you're going to gain something out of it. You're not only going to gain some skill improvement, you're going to gain some satisfaction, some fun. It may open up your eyes to some things that you didn't think you were capable of. But again, it goes back to that patience level of, if you're not patient with yourself and the program, who else is going to be? Last thing, you put trust in somebody to put the program together for you, whether it's Pete, myself, another coach, whoever it is. You've put a lot of trust in us. You've put a lot of trust in your equipment if you've gotten fit. Who else are you going to trust? You have to trust you. And if you're not out there building trust in what you're doing through a program, how are you going to build confidence? Contrary to popular belief, confidence does not come with anything more than trusting yourself, living through a little bit of adversity, understanding how to handle that adversity, but more importantly, getting through the growing pains of improvement. And as you go through that and start trusting yourself, I think you're going to surprise yourself when you get on any tee box anywhere in the world how much more confidence you're going to have.
Great way to end the Coach's Corner segment tonight. Well done, guys. You hit some really great points this evening. One last thing that I would add is, from the student's perspective, never be afraid to ask questions. If you're working with a coach or a teacher professional, don't be afraid to ask them questions. If you're unsure, better to get them to repeat or clarify their position so that you fully understand, because the last thing they want to do is tell you something or point something out that you're not fully receiving, and then only to find out that you're confused at later. So don't be afraid. There's no question that's really stupid or silly or what have you. Ask the question and better to understand. So on that note, I want to thank you guys for doing a great job on tonight's Coach's Corner panel. And as always, I'll give you a quick moment to let the folks know the best way to reach you, Pete and then John.
Well, again, thanks, Ted. John, thanks again. It's always a pleasure to be on with you. They can reach me at PeteBuchananGolf.com. All my information's out there. And just a simple way to get in touch. So let's start a conversation and get your golf game going.
John, go ahead.
Sure. John at John Hughes Golf, johnhughesgolf.com. The social media the same. Just a real quick plug that there's very few spots left for me in Orlando at Omni Champions Gate Resort, my new home in Orlando. It's a fantastic facility. Hope you can get to see me there. And there's now availability at Macklemore to see me. I'll be going up there May 1 as their new director of instruction. Very excited for that seasonal opportunity. I hope you do get a chance to go up there. I was just up there last weekend. It's a special place, a place where you can really get a lot done with your golf game and enjoy some serenity and quiet. Two top 100 golf courses. It's fantastic. And Ted, Pete, again, thanks for the opportunity. It's always a lot of fun for me, the second Thursday of every month, to get on and share the passion I have with everybody.
Always a pleasure, Pete and John. Thank you for all you bring to the Coach's Corner segment of this show. And you guys have a great weekend. And, John, safe travels. Thanks, guys. All right, that was the Coach's Corner panel segment, and we're going to take a quick break. And then I will be back with our special Golf Breaks by PGA Tour Travel segment. We'll be right back.
The following ad is sponsored by Golf Tips Magazine.
Are you tired of being short off the tee? And what about those three putts? Forget about it. It's time you got serious about your game. Golf Tips, the most in-depth magazine in the industry. For over 30 years, Golf Tips has delivered expert content such as the latest golf instruction from America's top pros, simple-to-follow practice and game improvement drills, fitness and mental game tips, equipment, training aids, accessory and apparel reviews, golf destinations and travel tips for every budget, and so much more. Don't miss a single issue. Go to golftipsmag.com and subscribe today.
This golf travel segment is sponsored by Golf Breaks by PGA Tour. If you are tired of researching and planning your group's golf trips, let the travel experts at Golf Breaks by PGA Tour help. Get a customized golf trip with their hassle-free service and save money with their guaranteed best prices. Right now, Golf Breaks by PGA Tour is offering up to $200 off your next golf trip, exclusive to Golf Talk Live listeners. Simply quote Golf Tips 200 online or over the phone. Terms apply. Go to golfbreaks.com to start planning your next golf trip today.
All right. I'd like to welcome everyone to our special travel feature, again sponsored by Golf Breaks by PGA Tour, with internationally published in golf and travel writer and award-winning photographer, my co-host this evening, Robert Kaufman. Also joining us this evening is our travel partner and special guest, Josh Post, who is the marketing executive at Golf Breaks by PGA Tour. I'm going to tell you just a little bit more about each of them, and I'm going to bring the guys on, and we're going to have a discussion in our travel segment tonight. So Robert, as I mentioned, is our internationally known golf and travel writer. He has traveled throughout the world in addition to all 50 states and has played golf in over 26 countries. Following a 12-year career as a freelance journalist, photojournalist, he founded the Northern California's first monthly golf publication, Golf Today. Subsequently, he was honored as the Northern California PGA Sports Media Person of the Year and was instrumental in developing and guiding a golf marketing initiative to raise global awareness for California as a top-tier golf. Currently serves as a travel editor for Golf Tips, along with contributing to other publications, which he can be viewed on his website at pictureparfect.com. Also joining tonight is, as I mentioned, a gentleman from our travel partner, Golf Breaks by PGA Tour, and special guest, Josh Post. He is the marketing executive. Originally from Worcester, Massachusetts, he has been playing golf since he was about 12 years old and has been working with Golf Breaks by PGA Tour since the fall of 2019, so just a little over 4 years, working out of their office, U.S. office in Charleston, South Carolina. And on a side note, personally, he has lowered his handicap down to an 8, and his lowest round was 79, so he's, like the rest of us, still working on his golf game. So please welcome Robert Kaufman and Josh Pope. Guys, welcome to our special travel segment.
Victor, it's great to be here. Get this segment kicked off on the podcast. Excited about it.
Well, hey, very excited. You're not a problem, Josh. We're happy to have you. And again, a special thanks to our new partner at Golf Breaks by PGA Tour. Thank you to all of those great folks for helping to put this together. And really excited to kick this off. And as I've mentioned leading up to tonight's show, we're going to be featuring a special golf travel segment by Golf Breaks by PGA Tour every second Thursday, so the second and the fourth Thursday of each month on this broadcast. So we're really, really excited about that. Tonight, of course, is our inaugural. So, Robert, I'm going to just kick things off, and then I'm going to let you jump in as well as my my co-host. Josh, I think the first question, I think the obvious one for those that maybe are not familiar is maybe if you could kind of just give us an overview of Golf Breaks, who Golf Breaks is and essentially what you guys do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So in the easiest way to describe it, we are basically a travel agency for golf trips, specifically golf trips. And then we also offer tournament packages. So Golf Breaks was founded in the UK back in the late 90s and then expanded over to the US in 2016 into our Charleston market here to service the American and Canadian golfers. And basically what we do is we put together golf trips, take all the hassle out of doing it yourself. We partner with a number of the big name golf resorts, golf courses, a lot of the PGA Tour venues, and basically package accommodation and tee times into one, and basically just do all the work for you, so you don't have to.
Go ahead, Robert. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I didn't mean to jump in there. I was just hoping maybe to expand on what Golf Breaks by PGA Tour does. What is your relationship with the PGA Tour?
Yeah, absolutely. So we signed a partnership with the PGA Tour back in 2019. So they became a minority stakeholder in the business. And with that, opened up our connections with the PGA Tour to sell multiple PGA Tour destinations, mm-hmm. as well as utilize their channels, their marketing channels with the Golf Channel to obviously put our ads on the Golf Channel, as well as their database of email and basically audience across the board. So we have a great relationship with them. Our founders are actually down at TPC Sawgrass this week, meeting with them as they do annually. So we have a very strong mm-hmm. Partnership with the PGA Tour.
Excellent. Yeah. So just kind of kicking into the to what your role is as a tour operator. So, you know, decades ago, you know, vacation might have likely began with a visit to a travel agent, right, and who relied on
sure.
a combination of expertise and connections to find the best deals, plane tickets, hotels, tours, and what have you. Nowadays, obviously, fast forward, with all the online booking platforms, virtual golf tours, mobile apps, it's made it a lot easier for travelers to plan and book trips. And, of course, let's not forget about you know, the forthcoming of AI and what that might have on the future of travel planning.
Sure.
So really, from your perspective, why would you consider it important and advantageous to the golf traveler to depend on a golf tour operator such as yourselves?
Yeah, so when it comes to booking trips, you know, take a group of guys, for example, who go on an annual trip every year. You know, they go, they brainstorm, all right, we want to go to maybe these five destinations. And then, okay, well, now we got to do the research, and now we got to check availability and tee times and everything like that. So that's a mm-hmm. pretty strenuous side of, you know, your normal day-to-day, you know, your 9-to-5, what have you. So,
right.
the advantage of using an operator like us is basically all you have to do is let us know what you're looking for, and then you just have to sit back and basically book it and sit back and wait to travel. So it takes the stress out of doing all the calling around, doing all the, booking yourself. And usually we can actually get you a better price because we have such mm-hmm. great relationships with these venues. We can often save you around 10-15% than if you were to go and book it yourself with the venues direct.
Mm-hmm. So is what you're offering, are they all like prepackaged tours, or can they be customized to what your customer wants? I mean, if they want to go to Myrtle Beach or Scottsdale, what have you, and they want certain resorts or golf courses, you can put that together.
Absolutely, yeah. So our trips are 100% customizable. So, and we do groups of all sizes. We've done trips for groups for one golfer. We've done trips for a golf group of 100 golfers before. So, we can customize it exactly the way you want it, number of nights, number of rounds, tee times, all that.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing's prepackaged. You know, what you might see on our website is basically just an idea of the trips that we can put together. But ultimately, when it comes down to it, it is your golf trip, and we want to customize it the way that you want your trip to go.
Right, right. Okay. So what types of trips have you been seeing the most growth? Like, is it like luxury end, buddy trips, couples, families? You know, what area has been growing the most here recent months, years? Well, last couple of years.
Yeah. So obviously with the pandemic, and travel shutdown, I think the biggest, sector that we saw take the biggest hit was obviously our bucket list trips over to Scotland and Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously those trips with international travel being shut down during COVID, were out of commission for about a year and a half. So coming out of COVID, it's been the biggest, kickback are those trips over there. They're bucket list trips. They're on pretty much every avid golfer's bucket list. Nowadays people seem to be looking to check that off their list. So that's the biggest growth that we've seen. And with our partners over in the UK and Ireland, and obviously our headquarters being in the UK, our partnerships over there are extremely, extremely strong. So you can play Open Championship courses. You can play some of the hidden gems that maybe you haven't heard of, but are some of the best courses in Scotland or Ireland, and basically customize it to dates and times you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, you touched on the COVID thing, and obviously that's been a major issue in recent years. So it's interesting because it's been like exactly 4 years since the first restrictions were put in place, and certainly that had it impacted every aspect of travel. On the local level, it didn't. Golf participation surged tremendously,
right?
Because it was an outdoor activity. But when it comes to golf tourism, is it as strong now, or do you think it's stronger than it was pre-pandemic?
Yeah, I think it's certainly come back probably much stronger than it was. Obviously, with the amount of new golfers that took up the game during the pandemic, and obviously, over the number of years, honed their skills, and they're ready to take their game on the road, as I like to say, and take it to mm-hmm. on a trip to Orlando or Myrtle Beach. It's certainly come back a lot stronger after COVID than before.
Yeah. Has that kind of forced you guys to adjust or revise your business model from pre-pandemic?
It's changed the business model a whole lot. It's certainly been a growing pain. We obviously, mm-hmm. as we've seen the come in, we've obviously expanded our operation here in the Charleston office. To now about 45 agents.
Wow.
And we're also growing the destinations and golf courses and resorts in the destinations we already sell. So, we're growing mm-hmm. our offerings to help match the demand. And mm-hmm. I think the biggest piece that we're kind of looking to promote this year is advising golfers of seasonality and how that may affect the pricing that they're looking for.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Yeah, I was going to ask you. So, again, depending upon the season, where you can travel to play, whether it's winter in the east and you come west, or go down to Florida, what are some of the real most popular U.S. destinations you've been experiencing, like an uptick in bookings?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, it depends on the season. Now as we're coming out of spring, pretty much everything across the board is coming into the peak season here. So,
right.
I think the biggest influx of bookings that we've seen. Scottsdale is certainly a big one. Palm Springs is another great one. Myrtle Beach is fantastic. I think year round. With mm-hmm. over 200 golf courses along the 60-mile stretch. I mean, you can't go wrong with that. In Orlando, too. I mean, Orlando has a huge airport that's very accessible for a lot of guests from kind of all over the country. So it's certainly one of the easier destinations to get to, especially if you're flying.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good. Do you have anything you want to jump in here?
Yeah, let me jump in here real quick. Just a couple of points that I want to hit on while we still have some time left. So one of the things that I hear really that Golf Breaks does a lot of the heavy lifting for a lot of – I know from my own personal experience a number of years ago, I booked a buddy trip with some friends back home to Myrtle Beach, and I took on the reins, if you will. And I got to tell, and I'm saying this for the benefit of the listeners, You know, I pulled it off, but it was a lot of work. And I like the fact convenience now of these online platforms, and obviously having some great professionals like you have at Golf Breaks, that a lot of that heavy lifting is coming off of the organizer, shall we say, or the group, and is now sort of
right.
put on your shoulder. So really all they need to do is just decide where we want to go, when we want to go, and what we want to have included. So,
right.
I mean, I think that's fantastic. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, when Robert and I had our initial discussions about bringing this on board, we really wanted to partner with somebody that would be able to take that heavy lifting for a lot of, not only the listeners here on Golf Talk Live, but also our subscribers to Golf Tips Magazine, who are always looking for great opportunities. So
yeah.
I think typically, and just, you know, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong or not, but you know, typically in the past, you know, it started off with a lot of buddy trips. You know, golf has really changed the demographic. You're seeing a lot more women coming into the
right.
game. So you're seeing more couples wanting to play. So
sure.
are you seeing now through the bookings, obviously you're still seeing a lot of buddy trips, but are you finding that the golfers in their experience are looking for not just great golf, but other activities and other maybe great food,
mm-hmm.
cultural, what have you, other opportunities when they're selecting their destinations, excuse me. What are some of the things that you're seeing increase, if you will?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we offer our packages that we offer basically a package that we call the Golf Tour. And the Golf Tour, in our minds, is basically you're staying in the city, the center of a city. So let's just take Scottsdale, for example. So we have a great package to Scottsdale. You're staying right in Old Town Scottsdale, which is fantastic for multiple reasons. Walking distance to bars, restaurants. Old Town is also the home of the cultural center there in Scottsdale and the nightlife. So, you know, we do aim to put together some of these packages to, you know, these city centers, if you would, so people can have the option to also do the nightlife and the bars and the restaurants and any of the local attractions that, you know, that you might find in that area. Sorry, I got an ambulance rolling by. And, sorry, I don't know if you can hear that, but yeah, so I think certainly, you know, when it comes to those kind of trips, because obviously with a trip to a golf resort, you have everything there on site. You got multiple restaurants and bars and the golf and the spa and the pool and everything like that. So we do offer, again, a wide variety of those packages to those, you know, destinations that have outside attractions other than golf, Orlando being a big one, Myrtle Beach being a big one, especially in the summer. Scottsdale, like I mentioned, Las Vegas is certainly the top of the list when it comes to that. So, you know, I think, you know, it's a pretty wide range of what people are looking for when they're looking to take a golf trip. And we certainly offer them the option to do either a resort stand play or that golf tour that I mentioned. And the experts that we have here, they've actually visited these destinations. They've been to the hotels. They've been to the golf courses. They played the golf courses. Mm-hmm. So we're really the experts when it comes to, you know, telling you which golf courses are harder than others and, you know, which ones you're going to find the best value for your money. So, you know, we do a lot of the digging for you to be able to provide advice to what you're looking for if you're not sure on an exact destination.
Yeah, and that's so important. All right, well, I want to thank you, Josh. I can't believe the time has already slipped by already, but
yeah,
I got to go because I got my special guest coming on. Yeah, it goes by quick, but, you know, this is really just a sort of an inaugural, if you will, golf travel segment. We want to really thank you for the opportunity to partner with Golf Breaks by PGA Tour. And just to let the listeners know, again, there's a special offer right now by Golf Breaks by PGA Tour, and that is to all the listeners, get $200 off. Obviously, terms apply. Just either contact them or visit their website, golfbreaks.com, and enter promo code GolfTips200, and you'll receive that discount off your trip. So, Josh, I want to thank you very much for coming on and helping us to kick this segment off, and we're really looking forward. We'll certainly have you back again throughout the season for some updates and other information as well. But great opportunity for the listeners and obviously the subscribers to Golf Tips Magazine. And Robert, as always, thank you, my friend, for helping to co-host this new segment. We're really excited about it. You guys have a great week. And again, thanks to the partners at Golf Breaks by PGA Tour. Thanks, guys.
Awesome.
Thanks, Josh. Ted.
Thanks, Ted. Thanks, Robert.
All right. We're going to jump right into my interview portion of the show with my very special guest of the evening, Ken Griffin. He is the director of golf sales and marketing at Boyne Golf. With over 25 years of experience in the winter sports industry, Ken brings a wealth of knowledge to the table. After joining Boyne in 2008, he progressed through the ranks and now focuses on growing the team's golf opportunities year-round, expanding their efforts beyond the strong regional brand that they had enjoyed with the goal of establishing Boyne Golf as a national at a national level. In the spare time, he enjoys visiting his adult children out in Colorado, pursuing his hobbies of snow skiing, camping, hiking, and many other sports as well. And he is officiating the ski races for the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Association as well. So please welcome my very special guest this evening from Boyne Golf, Ken Griffin. Ken, welcome to the show.
Ted, thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for joining me, and I apologize. We ran a minute or two late on the last segment. I was trying to get them to speed up, and then I had to jump in there real quick, so I apologize for that. So for the folks that don't – and I just want to point out, too, because this was a travel section, just for the listeners out there, there is a lot of great golf happening up in the Michigan, up in the central part of the United States, and I know we're going to talk about that tonight. So especially at the Boyne properties, we're going to talk about that. But a lot of great golf up there, beautiful time, beautiful scenery, and all kinds of great stuff. So we're going to brag on that for the next little bit. But talk about, if you wouldn't mind, I'm going to let you brag, as I said, talk about Boyne Resorts and particularly about Boyne Golf. What is Boyne Golf?
Well, just a sec before I get into Boyne Golf, you hit the nail on the head with the great golf in Michigan. I think if people don't realize that we have 650 public courses and another 150 private. So we have to work really hard to be competitive in Michigan with 800 golf courses that, that we're trying to compete against. So that's a benefit for everybody that comes to Michigan to golf. So,
it's a beautiful area. Yeah, let me just add real quick before you start. It's a beautiful area up in Michigan. I haven't been to Boyne yet. I'm going to make my way up there. But Michigan, the state, is just a beautiful state, a lot of beautiful countryside and just breathtaking views and whatnot. And you guys certainly have some of the best. So go ahead and fill us in on a little bit more on the resorts in Boyne Golf.
Okay, well, truly a four-season state for sure, but the company was founded actually in 1947 by Everett Kircher and a couple of friends. Within 3 years, Everett had everything. And what grew from two ski areas in 1947 now has grown to 11 ski areas in the U.S. We're the third biggest ski company in the U.S. But in the mid-50s, he wasn't doing this very long. Some of your listeners may be familiar with Oakland Hills, which has held multiple championships in southern Michigan. Everett's in the mid-50s playing sitting there with a great friend who was a skier and a golfer. And he goes, what am I going to do in the summertime? I have this resort that I've started a couple of years ago. And the way I heard the story that we got into golf was about five beers later, they had the Fordson tractor out with a six-foot mower on it. And they cut a nine-hole executive course and put some bamboo flags in the ground. And that was our first nine-hole course there at Boyne Mountain, which we played in, up until the late 80s, early 90s when we built the Mountain Grand Lodge. But that developed really keenly aware that in 1963, he developed a resort called Boyne Highlands at the time. And that's where he really wanted to put in his first championship course. And he consulted with this same member from Oakland Hills, and he said, now I want to build a real course, not the one you and I built a few years ago. Who should I get? And he goes, well, the best golf course designer at the time, he goes, Robert Trent Jones Sr. He goes, but you'll never get him to come. And, you know, Everett was a shrewd businessman, And he goes, well, if I pay him enough, he'll come up. And lo and behold, our first course, real course, championship course was built at the Highlands, and it's the Heather. And today it's still one we hold the other courses to. As a matter of fact, in 2019, that 55-year-old course became the National Golf Course Owners Course of the Year. So it's not often that 50-year-old course wins those type of awards. But certainly that's where we got started. And what was one then is now 10 in Michigan. We own three resort properties in Michigan, Boyne Mountain, about 18 miles south of Petoskey, Michigan. The Inn at Bay Harbor and Bay Harbor Golf Club, that's a Marriott Autograph Hotel, and golf courses that are about 5 miles west of Petoskey. And then the Highlands, the second route that we've been developing since the 60s, is about 12 miles north of town. So that puts 10 courses all within about a 15-mile drive of Petoskey, Michigan.
Wow, that's fantastic. And what's interesting about this, as I was sort of alluding to, I mean, you know, a lot of people have gone to Michigan for other reasons, visiting family and things like that. But as you mentioned, I mean, there's just a plethora of great golf up in the state of Michigan and some beautiful views. And you guys have a fantastic resort presence up there. What differentiates, do you think, Boyne Golf from so many other great – I mean, there's a lot of great golf destinations in the United States. What's really unique about your area that you're probably the most proud of?
Well, we are blessed. We didn't have anything to do with it other than Everett picked a very good spot to build golf courses and resorts. But, you know, the summer climate in Michigan is just outstanding. I mean, our average temperatures are 70 to 75 degree days, or maybe 80 is a hot day. Then you also, you know, it's centered around the shores of Lake Michigan. There in Petoskey, there's a bay off of the lake. And then just tremendous terrain variety. And what really, that's kind of the start of it. What really sets us apart is the quality and variety of these 10 courses that make us unique, even at a national level. There are very few resorts where the resort controls your experience for 10 courses from the time you drive on to your check-in experience, to the bed you sleep in, to the breakfast you eat, to the, you know, the cut heights and the bunker raking and the overall quality of the course. You know, boy, we have mountain courses. We have valley courses. We have traditional parkland cuts through northern Michigan hardwoods, courses on Lake Michigan, courses on private lakes. You know, so one even set in a stone quarry on the shores of Lake Michigan. So it's really the quality and variety that set us apart. Even at a national level, it's the variety, because even our best competitors, they're sit in similar terrain. And we're very fortunate that we're not in similar terrain. It's very different terrain.
Yeah, and you know, it's such a beautiful area up there, as I said, and so many great golf courses. And I apologize, my little rat dog is barking in the background, so I apologize to the listeners. Something must be outside. Talk about some of the different packages that are available that Boyne Golf offers. Because, again, there's a lot of variety. Just maybe touch on some of them.
Well, I mean, we have the, you know, the stay and play package, which in a typical fashion, you come in the night before and stay, and then you play the next day. We also have unlimited golf packages where you literally play until your arms drop off. We have a champions package that's a stay at Bay Harbor. It's based on a twosome or a couple staying at Bay Harbor and playing our best courses of their choice, be it the Bay Harbor courses, or if they've done it before, they can play one of the other courses. And then we also have two golf weeks. One's a Super Five. That harkens back to when we only had five courses back into the early 90s. And then there's another one that's called a Michigan's Magnificent 10. So on the Super 5, you would check in on a Sunday. You play golf through Friday, and you have unlimited golf on five courses, and you can get on to the other five courses with upgrades if you choose to do it. The Magnificent 10 package gives you – it's our best value. It's one of the best values out there in golf. It is the most expensive package, but it still is the best value. You get – two rounds at Bay Harbor, plus you get unlimited golf on the other seven courses, as well as a lesson included, as well as a gift certificate, as well as time on our TrackMan range facility, our outdoor TrackMan range facility that we have at the Highlands. So it's a tremendous value. But it really, that's the you just do whatever you want pretty much for the week. But really, all of these are customizable. You know, we don't, one of the things about our packages, we don't make them available online to purchase. Anytime you have three resorts with the farthest drive you could possibly make is 26 miles between the properties. But even then, whenever you have 10 golf courses and all the variety of the tee times and the variety of the courses, and you have the different lodging facilities, I mean, between the three resorts, we own over 3,000 beds. We have over 100 different room types. So whether you want a standard room or to stay in a Marriott Autograph, whether you want a condominium or a townhouse, what do you want it in the village? Do you want it on a lake or do you want it on Lake Michigan? All those come into play. So we really, when you go to get a package, have you call and talk to somebody. As Josh was talking about earlier, sometimes it may be hard to plan, and the more options you have and the less you know about it, the harder it makes it. Even the tour operators that we work with, they call our guest experience agents. They tell us what their clients want, and then our guest experience agents, because they know us. They can do a better job. We want you to have the golf experience that you've always wanted to have and that you're dreaming of, and we think the best way to do that is by calling the 800 number and talking to one of our guest experience agents.
Yeah, and I think that's so important because, again, you know, as I was pointing out, you know, it, you want, in your case, you, to really do the heavy lifting. I mean, people want to go and have a great experience, but if they're unsure, especially if they're new to this type of travel and maybe they're newer to golf, you know, as I was talking about earlier in the broadcast, you know, in 2023, the National Golf Foundation came out with some statistics indicating, just an example, in last season, there was over 800,000 women, new golfers to the game. And that's a big number. So that tells me that you're going to start seeing even more couples coming out, wanting to travel. And obviously now that maybe the wife or partner or spouse, what have you, is playing golf or has learning to play golf, she's wanting to participate. So, you know, you want to, you know, again, I'm sure in most cases, she doesn't want to leave it up to her husband to book the trip. So it's kind of nice to have that sort of hands-on experience. Talk about a little bit, if you wouldn't mind, obviously some great golf, some beautiful scenery and accommodations, but Boyne offers so many other things as well. Talk about some of the other amenities that you have that are available for maybe somebody that, that, again, is new to golf, wants to play, but wants to know what else is there do while I'm there. What are some other activities that are available for the visitors to Boyne?
Well, for example, there's a bike path around this bay that we talked about called Little Traverse Railway. I mean, we have mountain biking experiences both at Boyne Mountain and at the Highlands, as well as Boyne Mountain, excuse me, as well as the Innet Bay Harbor. And this bike path rides, it's a 26-mile long bike path around Lake Michigan with views, relatively flat bike path that just does views. On property at the Highlands, we have zip line adventures. We have horseback riding. The same thing at the mountain, horseback riding, zip lining, as well. Michigan's largest indoor water park is an 88,000-square-foot water park located at Boyne Mountain and attached to the hotel there. We just put in a new Michigan's new largest tourist attraction. We call it Michigan's Second Bridge, but it's Skybridge, Michigan. That is at Boyne Mountain. It is 1,100 feet long. It's 120 feet off the ground, and you walk between two peaks at Boyne Mountain.
Wow.
Both resorts.
That's incredible.
Chairlift ride, so that if you've never experienced a chairlift, it doesn't have to be wintertime. We run it all summer for sightseeing. So it allows you to go to the top of the resort and get the view of those beautiful Michigan valleys and beautiful northern Michigan forest.
And, of course, no visit would be incomplete without some great dining options as well, which I know you have many available, correct?
Well, we have a lot on property, for sure. I think in the summertime you have you know, 8 or 10 different dining options at the Highlands. You have different, closest on-water dining on Lake Michigan is on the patio of the Inn at Bay Harbor. It's a stone's throw to the water from where you are sitting looking at sunsets out over Lake Michigan. And then down at Boyne Mountain again, probably 15 or 16 different dining options, both on a resort and right across from the golf course is a 450-acre lake, and we have a restaurant with a patio with a tiki bar that sits looking over. So all these are just great places to relax, enjoy the evening, and watch some spectacular sunsets.
Is there some other activities, entertainment-wise, that is also available in the area? So if people are coming up, is there maybe summer concert series, that type of thing going on as well in the area?
We encourage, I think a lot of resorts, they try and capture everything. And you could go to any one of the three properties and stay there and have a great vacation. We encourage our guests to get off property because what makes it so special, why all of our teams live up there, is all of the surrounding communities. So there are lakeside resort communities within 4 or 5 miles of all of these properties. And we encourage our guests to go there. Right by Boyne Mountain, you have Boyne City. In between, you have Walloon Lake. You go up to Petoskey, and the city of Petoskey is actually the biggest city. That's only 5 miles from Bay Harbor. And then Harbor Springs is just a very unique community on the north shores of the bay that's about 6 miles from the Highlands. And just tremendous dining, Gaslight Shopping Districts, unique shops. But over, around, and about, it's really become a winery region, too. It's newer to the winery region game. But we have 14 wineries now that sit in and amongst and between. If you drew the triangle around the resort, there are 14 wineries. Wow. Plenty of options to just relax and enjoy the scene.
Wow, that's a great that's a good selling feature right there. That makes me
you're
want
booking
even
that
come
ticket
up
now,
more,
right, Ted? You're getting
yes.
And later, yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be doing that a lot sooner. So let me ask you something else, too. I noticed, earlier when preparing for tonight, I was on the website. We'll give that information when we get ready to wrap up in a little bit. But I noticed that you have a short course that's coming soon. Can you talk a little bit about that? That's obviously something that a lot of people are starting to hear more and more about, is that sort of short course experience. And you guys have, I believe it's called the Dune Bray short course. Tell us a little bit about that, and when does that?
Well, we got a lot of work done. We didn't break ground on that until right after the 4th of July last year. And we got the majority of the holes done, but we still have a couple holes to do. So unique, the name Dune Bray that we chose is a short walk down a hill, which is very appropriate because this is actually sitting on the bottom few hundred yards of one of our ski slopes. So we have to wait for the snow to melt to finish the work that we have to do. We don't necessarily have a date that we're trying to chase. We talked a lot about it. We knew with all the work we got done that there would be people asking. And we've done a lot of renovations. Well, I'm sure we'll talk about those in a little bit too. But on any of these projects we've had over the last couple of years, we never set a date on any of them. We went back to whenever the course is ready to play and ready to play at the quality standards that we would expect or our guests expect our courses to be, then that's when it's going to open. But we are surely trying to do everything we can to get it open this summer. That's the timeline, is to have it open before the end of the summer.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, thanks. No, we've been working with Ray Hearn, a Michigan-based architect that just does outstanding work. And it's really, he took some of the styles of holes that his favorite styles from Ireland and Scotland. And none of these holes are a replica. We actually do have a Donald Ross Memorial course that's a replica. These are really just inspired by some of the famous styles of greens, like a volcano. But you know, it's the whole distance. It's all about fun and enjoying it. The whole distances are anywhere from 38 yards in the shortest hitting areas to about 135 or 140 yards in the longest hitting area. So it's just about enjoying the game. Whether you're just going out to play that, there's going to be a Himalayan putting course in beside it too for somebody who may not have the experience to get out on a short course. But whole idea is it's fun for all ages and not about a full 18 holes of golf.
Yeah, and you know that's important because I think in today's market, you know, properties like yourself and organizations like yourself have to really look at it because people are different. It's not like it was, you know, 30 years ago where, you know, people were more committed. They've got so many other activities going on. So for some, you know, they have to really carve out their time to play golf. And sometimes it may not be, you know, four and a half hours a day. They may want to just have a golf experience, but maybe not expel that much time. So it's good to have other options. You mentioned about upgrades. Let's talk about some of the upgrades. What has been some of the things that you guys have done to upgrade some of the property?
Well, everything from like all new bunker sand on the Arthur Hills course to the biggest renovation project and the one where just every time he makes a new hole, it's my new favorite hole on that course. But we've been working with Ray on the Donald Ross Memorial. And that course was built in the late 90s. It was a top 100 course when it was built. It kind of fell off the top 100 list because it wasn't a shiny penny. But, you know, think of technology in the late 80s when we were building that. It was unique. We had a team of four. Stephen Kircher, our current CEO, Bernie Friedrich, who's now the director of golf course development and acquisition, who was 46 years our senior vice president of golf and was the National Golf Course Executive of the Year last year, Jim Fleck and Bill Newcomb, who was the actual architect, actually got in a plane and flew around and played holes for about 3 years of famous Donald Ross courses and holes, for the most part in the eastern U.S., although there is one from Royal Dornick. So what we did was took the Donald Ross holes that fit the terrain that we had had and that we'd selected with Bill Newcomb. So they had started with 400 holes. They narrowed it down to 100, played those, narrowed it to 50. And then when push came to shove and we had to get 18, actually one of the things was these are all great holes and they would fit the terrain. Okay, this is at a private club versus a public club. Let's put in the one from the private club because nobody would have the ability to play that except the private club in here. So we created the Donald Ross Memorial Course. But again, the technology back then and how you could replicate it is not as good as Google Earth and GPS mapping and GPS on your earth moving equipment. So we've gone in and redone number one, number two, number 13, number 15, and number 16 all in the last 2.5 years. And we're going to start work on number 10 at the end of this summer, which is the Royal Dornick hole, not one he designed, but where he grew up and really what got him motivated to play golf.
You know, and you know, people don't really appreciate, you know, how much goes into, you know, they see a golf course and they don't understand. And for you guys, I mean, to be able to then turn around, you know, some years later and say, okay, we're going to make some changes and modifications. What are some of the changes? And you don't have to go through all of them, but what are some of the significant changes as an example that maybe you could give us on one of the holes that's going to change?
Well, on number one, to start off, we have a lot more sand there now than we did 2 years ago, 3 years ago, okay, because it's a replica of Seminole number six. So it's got a lot of sand. We're fortunate the hole beside it was from Pinehurst. That's our hole number 16. And so the sand kind of fits there as well on the thing. When you get to number 13, we went in over Labor Day a year and a half ago, and just played the hole short. The entire 150 yards into the green was redone. The entire green was raised 5 feet. The green is 60% bigger than it was, and an entire new bunker complex. when we got to 15, we actually had to close the hole for the year. That was 2 years ago. And what we found out, that was from Aronimink, and it's Aronimink number 11 from Newton Square, PA. And the board, well, we thought it was the exact replica, and so did Aronimink whenever we built it in the 90s. A few years ago, Aronimink found out that over the years, several of their boards had adjusted that holes and pulled out a large number of bunkers, probably because they were hitting into them. And so we shut the hole down, redid the whole hole, and one of the nicest compliments we had was 2 years ago at the PGA show, we're standing there and we're explaining to the head pro who was winning an award when Bernie was, and we had the picture of his hole and a picture of our hole. And we held him up on our phones to him, and he goes, "I only have one question, which one is mine?" And we thought that was about as nice a compliment as you could possibly get from the head golf professional at Aronimink.
Wow, that's fantastic. How do you find, and I mean, obviously, you know, in addition to the changes in that, I think one of the balancing acts for Boyne is to, how do you balance your golf experience so that it complements and helps make it challenging for the more experienced players, yet not make it so overly difficult for the newcomers to the game? Because that's one of the things that has been a sort of a balancing act for golf. I mean, there's been a lot of great resorts put up over the years, but one of the challenges is how do we make it fun for all levels? So it's challenging for the more experienced player, yet it's simple enough that for the new beginners, that they can go out and have some fun and not feel overwhelmed. So how do you guys, how have you been able to sort of find that balance?
Well, one of the things, and we kind of have a chuckle sometimes about all the initiatives to play it forward a tee and to choose your right tee. But Everett Kircher, like I said, was a very sharp businessman, and he wanted everybody to enjoy his courses. And literally since 1970, we've had five tee boxes where we first did it on the Heather. We put five tee boxes in so all ability levels could enjoy it. We had a few years ago, we went to six, and now we have six tee boxes on every one of our golf courses so that you can pick the length, and they're all non-traditionally colored, because in traditional colors, somebody will say, "I play the white tees," or "I play the red tees." Or,
right.
And so we have blue, orange, green. We have a red, we have a silver, we have a brown instead of a black, we have a purple. So we want you to take a look at the yardage card and figure out where you think you're going to have the most fun playing from. And we certainly encourage you to play from there.
Yeah, and that's important. Yeah, that's important. Go ahead. Sorry, finish your thought.
No, go ahead.
What I was going to say was it's extremely important, you know, as a teaching professional, you know, over the years, one of the challenges has been for players to, you know, Nicklaus famously talked about how even he had to move up a tee box here and there just because he doesn't hit it as far as he used to. And he was, I remember he had a campaign years ago where he talked about that. He said, you know, play it forward. And he was trying to encourage, you know, a lot of the amateurs out there to do just that. And I think it's important because, again, the one thing that you want is for anybody that comes to your location is you want them to go away feeling satisfied that, A, you know, they had an overall good experience, not just with the whole property in general. Of course, that's the priority. But their golfing experience is one that they can talk about and say, "Hey, I had fun with, and it was challenging, but yet it was simple enough that for my game – that I was able to walk away with sort of a feeling, hey, you know, it didn't beat me down," in other words. And I think that's something that's very difficult, or has been very difficult for a number of years. So it's nice to hear that you guys have really been on top of that. How far in advance should somebody plan if they want to come up and see you guys? Let's say they want to come up in July or August and enjoy some of the great weather and obviously the great property and golf advantages. How far should advance do you think that they should plan that trip?
If they want the best opportunity to play exactly what they want and exactly when they want to play it, they should be thinking a year in advance.
Okay. Wow.
Now, because like for this summer, we have been actively selling summer 2024 since the 1st of June 2023. Now,
right.
As I said earlier, we have a lot of lodging on property. You know, we have 3,000 beds. We can probably find a spot for you. But, you know, if you want the best time to do it, the earlier you can do it, the better opportunities you have out there, and the prices are lower. You know, this is one of the things that's really changed. I mean, the you know, COVID really made golf popular. Everybody wanted to get out. It was an activity they could do. And we really can, I mean, prior to that, I would have said, look, if you late September, early October, start thinking about the next summer. It's literally since then moved up another 120 days as to when you can start planning your golf. And I mean, for us, to give your listeners an idea, we typically have, by the time we open, we start opening courses in late April. By the middle of May, we have all 10 open, and we play golf through the middle of October, mid to late October. And typically for us, we are selling about 70% of last year's golf on reserve before we ever open a course.
Wow.
So there's still availability, but it continues to move backwards. So, you know, if the listeners still want something, we can try and, you know, certainly get them something. The other thing that's really been a big change for us as far as who we attract, and, you know, we had the stated goal 8 or 10 years ago of trying to take it more nationally. One of the things that really helped us was that it's not just a drive market destination anymore, which we had been for years. Right now, Traverse City, which is TVC Airport in Traverse City, is about an hour and 20 minutes from our courses, depending on which resort you go to. But now there are direct flights from 18 U.S. cities, Arizona, Texas, both Houston and Dallas. Florida has Allegiant flying on four different airlines. But direct from Boston, from Newark, all of D.C., Atlanta, Charlotte, Denver has direct. So that we've really, you know, where people come from to play our courses continues to morph dramatically, because everybody wants to escape the heat of the South and enjoy all those great vistas and the great weather and the long days that we have. You know, Wisconsin has great golf also. We said it's great, but they just put it on the wrong side of the lake. We have an extra hour of daylight.
Right. That's a great point.
And better sunset.
And you know what's
because we're looking at sunset over Lake Michigan.
Well, and the other thing too is, you know, what's interesting about Michigan is that the leaves begin to change actually before fall. They start to show a little bit earlier than what people might think. So, you know, you're playing golf, as you said, sort of up to mid-October. So you can come, you know, probably I would assume, and quote me if I'm wrong, it's been a while since I've been up in the Michigan area, but probably sometime late August, you're going to start to see the you know, season change. And obviously when you get into September, so, I mean, that's something, obviously, unfortunately, Florida, we don't have. We've got some great golf down here, too, and a lot of great destinations, and we have winter golf. But we don't have the season change as you do as beautiful in Michigan. So that's another great feature to I guess, brag about, is that you can see a little bit of the season change up here in Michigan, right?
Oh, for sure. For sure. And it's, you know, I said, Michigan has four seasons. Usually we didn't have a great winter this year, but we typically have four seasons, and it's a great spot to live if you like four seasons, and gives you an opportunity to look at, you know, great views with slightly different settings.
If you could sum up in, let's say, a paragraph or a few sentences, the Boyne Golf experience, what would you say to the listeners?
Well, I would say I'm hard-pressed to think of any place else where you can go, where you can have tremendous weather. You have easy access into it and out of it, and that you have the ability to experience a variety of the courses. You know, down at Boyne Mountain, when you leave the golf shop, you have a 1.2-mile drive to get to the top tees. You actually drive to the top of the mountain, and the two courses there play off beside each other, right by the tower of the Skybridge attraction. Anyway, you play back down the hill after a 10-minute drive up. When you go to Bay Harbor, you've just left this resort 20 minutes ago. Now you're at Bay Harbor, and you are looking 145 miles of Lake Michigan to the shores of Wisconsin, which you can't see. But you just have spectacular views from the three courses there, as well as Crooked Tree, which is just across the street. It's less than 2 miles away, and quite frankly, a little bit higher in a bluff. It just doesn't sit right on the lake. And then, you know, 20 minutes north, you get to the Highlands, and you've got your own little microcosm there of, you know, we have a wetlands course. The original was built around a blueberry bog. The Moor course is another traditional parkland course. The Donald Ross Memorial sitting in the foothills of the mountain. And then the hills is very unique. It's a 9-mile cart path. It would take you 45 minutes just to drive the cart path. So that is about a 4.5-hour round. We're just over. But you drive through low production forest, and then you drive to the top of a ridge. And the top of this ridge is a 350-foot drop from tee to green, and you're looking at 4,000 acres of northern Michigan hardwoods that you can't see a building on.
Wow.
So the variety across that 25-mile drive to get to any of the 10 courses, or if you're in the middle, 15 miles either way, you know, you just can't find that type of variety. And again, with this quality of golf, where we have courses that win awards, we have courses that are in the top 100 or 125. They all aren't, because we know that with 10 courses, they can't all win awards. But we don't change our standards that our superintendents have to meet. There's tons of things to do when you're off the course, but we know it's going to start golf-centric with a great golf experience, and then you can enjoy all the other activities in and around our resorts that truly make the northern experience, the northern Michigan vacation experience, unique, and that's what keeps people coming back.
And each of the resorts offers a uniquely different experience too, right, which makes it even that much more exciting. So, you know, if you came this year, you could have one experience next year. Obviously, the golf is going to be great wherever you go, but your lodging is a little bit different for each location. So you've got some different options depending on what your personal preferences are, so that it's a different experience. So you can come back each year and literally have a different experience each time, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Inn at Bay Harbor is kind of like a mini Del Coronado or a Mount Washington hotel. I mean, it's the red roof, white exterior, only it's 100 years newer, and it's sitting right on the lake. And then, you know, Boyne Mountain is all about Bavaria. The look, the touch, the feel is all about the Austrian Alps or Swiss Alps. And then when you go to the Highlands, it is. It was built around the theme of the Scottish Highlands. And right down to the longhorn hairy Highlands cattle that we have as you drive in.
Wow. Well, it's definitely a place to go for the listeners tuning into the show tonight. I definitely want to encourage you to certainly investigate. As Ken has mentioned, they're very, very busy, but there are some availability, so you want to do that. Where can the listeners go if they want to get more information, and if they want to reach out? What's the best website for them to go to, and then to take it from there?
Okay. Well, if you're interested in golf, which is why we're here, it's just
right.
Go to boinegolf.com. We keep it simple. We give you the ability to experience in the drop-down menu. Once you get there, you can see that the three different resort properties. You can look at all the courses. You can look at the activities and the events that we have. There's a place to take you to the local chamber so you can see the local resort towns around each one of us. But what I say is go in and get a feel for Boyne Golf. And then if you just call the 800 number on the website, that'll take you right to a golf experience agent. And I say have the site up when you're doing it, because from there they can take you and, you know, show you the courses, show you the rooms. Any questions you have, they can answer all if you're just on boinggolf.com and dial the 800 number that takes you right through to our golf guest experience agents.
Fantastic. And you mentioned sometime in April, you'll start opening up your 10 golf courses, correct?
Yeah, the last weekend in April. So we start opening courses the last weekend in April, and within 3 weeks we have all 10 courses open.
So definitely some time. So go to boinggolf.com and do as Ken suggested. Take a look and see what's there. There's a lot of information available. And then reach out through their 800 number and speak to one of their very talented and skilled representatives who will help guide and navigate you to where you want to go. Ken, thank you very much for coming on. It's been very interesting. I've been up the Michigan area over the years a number of times, never been to Boyne, but I'm going to make a point of doing that because you got some great properties up there. I'm not going to ski, though. I'm not coming up in the winter to ski. I've done my skiing downhill days are over, but I definitely like some water sports and some camping and all of that good stuff. So I may partake in some of that, but definitely want to challenge myself on some of the great golf courses there. But thank you very much for joining me tonight, and would love to have you come back anytime.
Ted, thank you very much. Really appreciate it, and look forward to you coming up.
All right. Sounds good. Ken, thank you very much, and you have a great weekend.
Thank you.
All right. All right. That was Ken Griffin, the Director of Golf Sales and Marketing at Boyne Golf. Again, go to boinegolf.com. A lot of information there. As he mentioned, they're doing some upgrades to some of the holes there on the Don Ross Memorial. And also the Dune Bray short course. They're still working on that, but hopefully some point later in the season they'll have that open and up and running, and I think it, from what I could see on the website, you'll see it when you go there. Looks like it's going to be an interesting, challenging short course, so definitely want to do that. Reach out to them, though, and if you've got a package in mind, or maybe you've been up there before and you want to, maybe it's been a few years and you want to go back again, go to boinegolf.com and reach out to their agents. They're happy to help and help you plan your trip up to the Michigan area. It's a beautiful area. And as Ken had mentioned as well, the weather is great in the summer. It's not as hot and steamy as it can get down here in the southeast part of the United States. So maybe that's where you want to go this summer for a special trip. And again, you can't beat it being right on Lake Michigan. So on that note, I want to thank everybody. Again, special thanks to John Hughes and Pete Buchanan for joining me on the Coach's Corner panel. Also a special thanks to my good friend and buddy, Robert Kaufman, and also Josh Post from Golf Breaks by PGA Tour for joining me on the special travel segment. We'll be in 2 weeks' time. We'll have Robert and another special travel partner guest will be coming on that episode. So we'll do that. So next week it will just be the Coach's Corner and the regular interview guests. We're back to sort of the normal platform. So every couple of weeks we'll have that travel segment in there, and we're going to try to give you some tips as we move along. But if you want to book a trip, if you're a Golf Talk Live listener or maybe you're a Golf Tips Magazine subscriber, happens to be listening to the show and you want to book your trip, you can go to golfbreaks.com and search out. You can either call them or you can search yourself if you want to book the trip yourself. And if you enter or give them promo code GOLFTIPS200, that's GOLFTIPS200, that'll take $200 off your trip. So certainly some details. Certain things apply, obviously. You'll have to check with them. But it's a great opportunity. Go to Golf Breaks by PGA Tour. Today, golfbreaks.com is their website, and use promo code GOLFTIPS200. I want to thank everybody, and again, also a special thanks to Ken Griffin, Director of Golf Sales and Marketing at Boyne Golf. Thanks, guys, for joining me tonight. I will see you next week right here on Golf Talk Live.
Thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this week's broadcast of Golf Talk Live. We'd like to thank this week's Coach's Corner panel, and a special thank you to tonight's guests. Remember to join Ted every Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. Central on Golf Talk Live. And be sure to follow Ted on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you're interested in being a guest on Golf Talk Live, send Ted an email at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. This has been a production of the iGolf Sports Network.